Thanks for listening to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. The program today is the second part of four shows about Lewis and women. This podcast is one of many features of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, the creator of that site and your host and producer of All About Jack. EssentialCSLewis.com is a feature partner site of the Middle Earth Network. Each of these shows in this special mini-series on Lewis and women are aimed to be around 15 to 20 minutes. That means that we're having to leave out a lot of material that Crystal shared in her 12-part blog series, so be sure to check that out. If you haven't listened to the first show, be sure and do that, as it has an overview of all the topics that we'll be discussing. You can check the show notes at EssentialCSLewis.com for a direct link to that, along with a link to any other materials that is mentioned. If you did hear that debut program, then you know that Dr. Crystal Hurd is my special guest, and I also have a special co-host for the mini-series. Sharing duties with me is Gina D'Alfonso. Welcome back to All About Jack, Gina.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Now, Gina, go ahead. We shared about you last time, or I did. I'll let you this time take a few moments to tell the listeners about yourself.
Thanks. Well, I'm editor of Breakpoint.org. The listeners who are familiar with Chuck Colson know that he started Prison Fellowship Ministries, and he also started Breakpoint as part of that. It's more a worldview type of ministry where we have a radio show and a website and things like that, and I'm in charge of the website. So we publish feature articles and columns. We have a couple of blogs. So you are welcome to come check us out at breakpoint.org.
Well, Dr. Hurd is the person who's in the hot seat. She's no stranger to uncomfortable situations. When she was defending her doctoral thesis on Lewis and leadership, she had someone involved in that final step complain that Lewis encouraged the oppression of women. That situation was one of the reasons we are here today, as she created a series of blog posts at her website, crystalhurd.com, which provided a detailed defense to clear up such ill-informed views about Lewis's perspective on the fairer sex. Welcome back to All About Jack, Crystal.
Thank you for having me, William.
Well, the focus on this second program today is looking at the factual women in Lewis's life, that is, the women that he had a chance to meet, he corresponded with, and so forth. More specifically, we're going to be looking at his mother, Flora, then Mrs. Moore, a lady that he lived with for a number of years until her death, someone he corresponded with called Sister Penelope, who he did meet, a lady that he didn't meet that he knew or that we only knew initially as the American Lady, but we later learned her name. And we mentioned it last time. Crystal will reveal that if you're not sure who that is. And then the Socratic Club, as well as a famous or infamous debate that happened with Elizabeth Anscombe. Well, let's kick things off by starting with this. Crystal, how does the fact that in Lewis's late childhood and early adolescence, women were mostly absent from his life impact him?
Yeah, I think that actually the absence of women did sort of impact his initial views of females. For one, of course, his mother was absent for his later childhood. She passed away in 1908. He did have Lizzie Endicott, which is his nurse and a tutor, but mainly as far as the strong female presence of a mother, he didn't have. And also, after his mother's death, his father sent him away to a number of male boarding schools where he was bullied viciously because he was not athletically talented, I guess. And so he sort of, his father was emotionally distant at that point after his mother's death. So he was removed actually from a lot of females up until his later years at Oxford.
Related to this, what can you tell us about the two women who shaped Lewis's early life?
I would say definitely say that Flora, although she was only with him a short while, definitely influenced him. She was a very positive influence. And we'll mention briefly Miss Cowie. Miss Cowie was a sort of a surrogate mother he had at Cherbourg House. He was sent there after a couple different ones, boarding schools. And she was philosophically an amalgamation. She was not, she sort of followed various different philosophical bents. She sort of presented a different spiritual picture for Lewis, which was not good for his faith. But she actually mothered Lewis to the point where she was dismissed from her job because she was hugging him, they said, too often. And she was, usually they would censor the letters that they sent home, and she fought to, you know, to not censor his letters home to his father and his brother, and that was against policy. So she was actually dismissed for trying to shelter and mother Lewis. So very interesting. Again, Miss Callie sort of had a negative influence as far as philosophically, but she sort of stepped in as a mother figure for a little bit of his adolescence.
Well, something, Crystal, you did talk about last time. You can kind of recap some of those things, although it is in the first program. But that is, you know, Lewis's relationship with his mother, who did die when he was not yet 10 years old. Can you tell us some more about that?
Sure. She actually suffered from some headaches, and which may have possibly been migraines, but she also had abdominal cancer. And I mentioned in the last show that during that time, you know, in the early 20th century, the doctors actually came to your house to perform surgery. So Lewis actually heard the surgery, heard the doctors and the nurses and all the commotion downstairs as his mother was having surgery. And he's tried to be strong during that time and pretend, even as young as he was, that it wasn't affecting him. But in addition, when Flora was feeling better, she would actually tutor Lewis in Latin, French, and math. And a lot of people know that math was not Lewis's strong subject. So interestingly enough, Flora had a degree in mathematics, which is very rare at that point in history. But she did spend time with him when she was feeling well. And I believe that even later in the letters, Lewis recalls with great fondness all these moments that he had with his mother.
Now, we mentioned Mrs. Moore briefly last time. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of her and shed some light on this often controversial relationship?
Absolutely. Mrs. Moore was a divorcee. She was actually not technically divorced from her husband, whom she called the Beast in correspondence, but they were not technically divorced. She was sort of living separated from her husband, but her son is Paddy Moore, who was an Irishman who joined World War I, which Lewis fought in as well. They were roommates in the cadet battalion, and in 1917, they were at the officers' training corps in Oxford and became great friends, and they made an oral pact that if one of them died in battle, the other would take care of his family. And of course, Paddy did pass away in battle. And so Lewis made good on his promise and took care of Mrs. Moore and Paddy's younger sister, Maureen. They actually purchased the kilns together in 1930. So until the end of Mrs. Moore's life, Lewis, you know, lived with Mrs. Moore. And even when she got very sick towards the end of her life, he visited her every day in the retirement home. So there are a lot of controversial articles out there about the nature of their relationship pre-conversion. Some people have asserted that they were lovers early on because he did spend some furlough time with them before Paddy passed away. And Mrs. Moore moved quite often to be near Paddy, wherever Paddy was stationed. So she was a constant presence, honestly, in his life. But we don't know much about the relationship other than speculation. Some folks have assumed, one of his friends said it was a 50-50 chance. Some people believe the way the house was set up, perhaps they were lovers in a younger time. But we do know that over time, their relationship changed, especially after Lewis's conversion to Christianity, and it became more of a mother-son relationship. Of course, you know, she was missing her son, and he was missing his mother, so they sort of filled the void for each other.
Well, Crystal, you've touched on this somewhat, but I want to kind of go over a certain aspect, and that is many consider it odd that Lewis, the great Christian, lived with an older woman who wasn't even divorced. But you point out in your blog, especially in good detail, that their relationship began when he was a professing atheist. Why is this important to underscore?
I think it's incredibly important, and Lewis wrote frequently about the fact that when you are an apologist and an outspoken Christian, you are under the microscope. You are criticized more severely than most people because you have set yourself up as an example. So I think it's important, and every time I see these articles, they crop up every so often. Somebody says, oh, did you know Lewis lived with a divorced woman? You know, and people try to stir the controversy, but we don't have anything. We have nothing, really, that's set in stone or written about any sort of passionate relationship. Obviously, in the letters, he actually refers to her as mother in some of the later letters, and sort of becomes a son. Of course, I want to mention this briefly, but in his diary, which was written on my road before me, which was written in his younger years as an undergraduate at Oxford, he used the symbol, the Greek letter delta for her name, and that's the priestess, actually, from Plato's Symposium, who introduces Socrates to the meaning of love. So, but again, what type of love? Is it sort of this, is it a deep, you know, eros type love, like, you know, like we would talk about in the Four Loves, or is it sort of this motherly affection, you know, type love? So it's a great question to ask, and it's one that we consider and turn around, but I think that will forever remain a mystery unless we find some sort of hidden letter or some sort of some testimony that sort of comes out of experience, but we have really nothing but speculation and curiosity.
Now, I've heard that Mrs. Moore was, you know, not particularly intellectual, whereas Lewis, of course, was extremely intellectual, but it seems as though she may have had some things to teach, you know, even the great C.S. Lewis. What would you say about that?
Absolutely. Mrs. Moore is sort of the antithesis of C.S. Lewis in many ways. She was not well-read, and as you mentioned, she was not an intellectual woman. However, she was incredibly generous and incredibly hospitable. If you've read All My Road Before Me, which again is his early diary, there is a constant flow of visitors in and out of the house because she's such a good hostess, and she's again so hospitable and loving and welcoming and giving. And even though they were struggling financially, she was always very giving to her visitors. So I think Lewis actually learned, you know, later on, you know, at the kilns, he welcomes children, you know, into the kilns during World War II. And I think he learned a lot of those lessons from Miss Moore.
Shifting over to Lewis's correspondence, people that he wrote to, Sister Penelope is someone we didn't even get a chance to introduce in our overview, but she in some way seems like an unlikely friend for Lewis. Who was she, and how did their exchanges impact Lewis's perspective on women?
Well, Sister Penelope is a really interesting lady. She's a nun, and she read out of The Silent Planet in August of 1939. She wrote to Lewis and actually discusses how she loves the concept, and it was something she's never encountered before. And from sort of that fan mail, developed a really great correspondence about spirituality and just excellent. And we do know that in 1942, Lewis came and he met Sister Penelope when he spoke there at the convent. And Paralandra is actually dedicated to the women at that convent, I think based off of Sister Penelope's enthusiasm for the book.
Are there any other women that Lewis corresponded with who also influenced his view of women?
Absolutely, Gina. Mary Willis Shelbourne, which we know as the American Lady, she has her own collection, actually, in Letters to an American Lady. She was actually a poet, well-established. She was published in Poet Lore, the New York Times, and the Saturday Evening Post. And she was a widow, so she didn't have a lot of money. But she began and continued an enduring correspondence with Lewis on a variety of topics. And we have a lot of great Lewisisms, for lack of a better word, because of the American Ladies' correspondence and the depth of their discussions through the correspondence. So, I think also she showed him sort of again the depth of spirituality and just humanity in general from a female perspective. So, I think her contribution to Lewis's continuing evolving view of women was important.
Well, now, the Socratic Club was something that we didn't get a chance to mention last time. If you could first give us kind of a thumbnail sketch about that and how that impacts Lewis's view on women, or potentially, and then also the infamous debate that was mentioned last time.
Sure. The Socratic Club actually was catalyzed by a female chaplain at Oxford, Stella Aldwinkle. It was her desire to start some sort of open forum to discuss Christianity, rationality, sort of intellectual, I guess, apologetic, discussions about faith, and Christians and non-Christians were both invited to these forums. Typically, it would involve everyone showing up. Two papers. One was presented with a side, and then there was a refutation paper, and then they would have questions and discussions. And we actually, thanks to Joel Heck, we have a great compendium called the Socratic Digest that you can get that sort of details all those. But Stella had talked to Lewis, Stella Aldwinkle had talked to Lewis about starting something like that, and Lewis became the first president of this club. Very interesting. Again, it was started by a female. And McGrath actually mentions in his biography of Lewis that in 1944, out of 164 members, 109 were female students. So a huge majority of this intellectual discussion they were having were composed of females. And even if you look in the Socratic Digest, the secretaries and treasurers were a good mix of males and females. Honestly, the whole club was very democratic as far as gender. And they both welcomed, they welcomed discussions, very good discussions from both genders. And that's where we meet Elizabeth Anscombe, who, as we mentioned in the first show briefly, had refuted Lewis's claim that naturalism is self-refuting, which is chapter 3 of Miracles. She did such an incredible job with that paper that Lewis revised that chapter. So, but again, there has been some discussion. There's a very absurd notion that Anscombe is the White Witch, that he recast her as the White Witch, which is complete drivel. as a matter of fact, Lewis recommended, Anscombe as his replacement as president of the Socratic Club later in a letter to, I believe, Stella Aldwinkle. So I'm obviously not really resentful. He had a lot of respect for her, enough to where he felt that she was a worthy, replacement for him in leading the club. So I think it's an interesting debate, but I think it shows that Lewis respected intellectual women and that he was open and receptive to their ideas.
Well, time is quickly coming to an end here. Before an official wrap here, Gina, you had an opportunity to read Crystal's blog here, and you're already familiar with a lot of aspects in terms of Lewis and women and some of the things that are misunderstood. But can you tell us, just give us some brief reflection on what you did read?
I think it's so great that Crystal did this because, as she said, there are so many misconceptions out there and so many people repeating falsehoods about Lewis and his view of women without even bothering to study or examine the truth. And here she's assembled all these facts and all these important truths right here in one place where people can, easily just get a real sense of what the truth was and the depth and complexity of Lewis's relationships with women and how highly he really did view them and how much he did respect them. So it's really a valuable resource, and I recommend it highly.
Well, as I noted, we are our time is pretty much gone for this program today. We'll be looking at some other issues regarding Lewis and women. The blog series, of course, goes into much more detail, covers even topics that we don't even get a chance to touch on. Next time, we're going to look at the fictional women in Lewis's life, so to speak. That is, we're going to look at some of the books that he wrote. We're going to focus in on Narnia. Obviously, that's 7 books, so that's enough to talk about. If we get a chance, we'll also look at some of the other women in the other stories that he wrote. And then our last program is going to deal specifically with some things that we didn't talk about this time with the factual. That is Ruth Pitter, Dorothy Sayers, and of course, Joy Davidman. So let me say thanks to Gina for helping me co-host this series on Lewis and Women.
Oh, very glad to participate.
And then, of course, what would this program be without Crystal here today? Thanks, Crystal, for making it possible for us to chat with you.
Oh, you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
And just briefly, go ahead and give your website and spelling and then some of the other things besides the Lewis and the Women that you've dealt with.
My website is crystalhurd.com, and I'll spell that for you. It's CrystalHurd. And I do a lot of Lewis-related stuff on there. Of course, as we mentioned earlier, I write a lot about Lewis and leadership, which was my thesis, and women as well. But any sort of topic that tickles my fancy, I will write on and discuss and reflect on as well. So I also do some writing for Legendarium, which is a sci-fi fantasy site, and I talk about some Lewis aspects on there as well.
Excellent. So we'll have links in the show notes to things that Crystal has done. And then don't forget to stop by centralcslewis.com for other interviews that I've done. Had a chance to interview quite a few people last year. I've done in the past, not just necessarily last year, Dr. Michael Ward. I did a series that I introduced or just did the first part of my All About Jack. I'll have a link to that, though. That is a whole series on Narnia, which is going to be our topic next time. I had various Lewis experts chat on each of the different books, and we discussed that. So be sure to check out that and other things on my website that include a daily fact, quote, and quiz, along with a weekly spotlight on another resource that you can find online, of course, related to C.S. Lewis. Well, EssentialCSLewis.com is a featured partner site of the Middle Earth Network.